This is Father Bob Warren of the Franciscan Friars of the Atonement. Thank you for listening to this rebroadcast of the Ave Maria Hour radio show. The Friars' popular Ave Maria Hour was first brought to the radio airwaves in 1939, recorded in New York City and on the mountainside grounds at Graymore, a home in Garrison, New York. These timeless classic stories of the Bible and the lives of the saints came to life each week through dramatic reenactment by professional actors and actresses. You know, friends, Christ once said, "Do not hide your treasure under a bushel." In saying this, he meant, share your gifts, share your talents. The Friars of the Atonement feel the message in these broadcasts remains as powerful and timely as when they were originally aired, and we are so happy to be able to share them with you today. To learn more about the missions and ministries of the Friars of the Atonement, I invite you to visit our website, www.atonementfriars.org. In the meantime, sit back and enjoy this rebroadcast of the Ave Maria Hour.
Story of St. Francis, the beloved little poor man of Assisi. More than 7 centuries ago, Francis Bernardoni walked about the Italian countryside, a man who had made himself poor for the love of Christ, yet of his spiritual riches gave to all he met. Today there is not a country in the world where his name is not known, and there are few hearts the world over so hard that they have not responded to the spell of his unique personality. Saint of the whole world, truly, is Francis of Assisi.
Our story begins on a moonlit evening in the year 1202 in the old city of Assisi. Through its narrow, curving streets, in and out of the black shadows of the high stone walls, a gay procession is winding.
King of love, give us your blessing.
A thousand blessings and welcome, my faithful subject. But what need of them have you? The fair Maria is already beside you.
No one besides me, great monarch. Give me a thousand blessings. Even better, I shall take one of the maids from your court.
Who entices the lady from my court is guilty of high treason. Away, base thief, and the head shall roll to the ground.
You ask me what's wrong with the country? I'll tell you. When I was young, we didn't go through the public streets howling like a pack of wolves. Who's that young man with all those girls around him?
He's Francis, the son of Pietro Bernardoni, the merchant. He's just back from Perugia, where he was a prisoner of war. He's a wild youth, but he'll quiet down once he's married and has a family.
I'll say what you will, but I tell you, the situation is serious. Faith and decency are dying all over the country. The youth of our best families think nothing but revelry and fine clothes. Crime and bloodshed are the order of the day.
Well, we can do nothing about it. I, at least, must be getting home. My wife will be wondering what has become of me.
Well, I'll go with you as far as the corner. I have to call on Antonio, the wine merchant. If his shop is still open, I must... Be careful. There's a man lurking there in the shadow of the wall. Watch your purse.
He's not a robber. It's young Francis. Yeah, I wonder if he's ill.
Well, if he's ill, it's no concern of mine.
Francis!
Here come the others looking
Francis!
For him.
Francis! Where are you? You're spoiling all the fun. I see him. Hey, Francis, what's wrong? Francis.
What's the matter, man? Can't you speak?
Nothing. Nothing is the matter. I'm only thinking.
Thinking? That's a rare occupation when everyone else is making merry.
The poor fellow must be in love.
The king of love has fallen victim to his own spell.
Well, who is she, Francis?
Yes, tell us her name.
Is she beautiful?
Most important of all, is she rich?
My friend, she is. Someone richer and more beautiful than any of you can imagine.
And now the moon has risen to mid-heaven. The revelers have gone to their homes, and good citizens can sleep again. But in the deserted street, Francis Bernardoni stands long before the door of his father's house, gazing up at the bright moonlit sky.
I told them she was richer, more beautiful than any they could imagine. Poverty. My Lady Poverty. Yes, truly. To yield heart and soul to her in perfect love would be the greatest romance of all. Have I courage for that? I who love beauty and laughter, fine clothes, good food. Why do you seek me, O Christ, when there are better, braver souls whom you might call to your service? Or must I could beg you let me remain content as other men with the things of the world? Oh, but I do not beg it, my Lord. No, no. Continue to speak to my heart, dear Master. Make your will known to me. But give me courage when you do, for I am very much afraid.
Francis made a pilgrimage to Rome and returned, to all appearances, still a wealthy young worldling. One day, as he was riding past the great leper hospital on the outskirts of the city...
Yes, I would be a poor one to minister in God's name to the sick. That day in Rome, and I traded clothes with a beggar that I might know the feeling of wretchedness at first hand. Oh. Even now my flesh crawls at the thought of the filthy rags that covered it. Now the smell of decay that comes from these walls makes me faint. Noble men devote their lives to nursing the living dead behind that gate. But I could not bear to look at them. Their diseased, ravaged faces.
Alms, for the love of God. Good sir, I beg you, have pity on one whom God has afflicted with the dread disease of leprosy.
Francis pulled his horse to a stop.
Alms.
Here is my purse.
Your purse, my lord.
There is gold inside it. But hold out your hand.
But I am a leper, my lord. You must not come.
Hold out your hand, dear brother. Here is the purse. And now I kiss that afflicted hand in reverence. For truly you who have suffered so greatly must be very near the heart of our dear lord.
Oh, thank you, great sir. Thank you.
We embraced as brothers. And suddenly, compassion let me see his ravaged face as beautiful. I have conquered fear and horror. I thank you, my lord. From my heart, I thank you. Such happiness as I know now, I have never felt before.
Now, Francis often visits the leper hospital and spends hours talking with the inmates and attending to their needs. And with all the ardor of his soul, he prays for guidance that he may find his rightful place in the world. Then, one day, he comes upon a poor, half-ruined church in a field outside the city walls. It is the church of San Damiano, and on its wall is a very old crucifix, skillfully and lovingly painted by some long-forgotten artist.
Here is reality, the utmost of suffering and defeat, yet the greatest of triumphs. The answer to all the world's problems is here, if one can but read it. Love that surpasses all other love, limitless compassion, infinite generosity. Oh, my crucified Lord, I love you so greatly. My heart could break with the pain of its loving. Show me what you would have me do, that my love of you may bear fruit.
Francis, go and repair my church, which, as you see, is falling into ruin.
Was it a voice that spoke to me? Or a thought so suddenly strong, it was like a voice. Go and repair his church, he said. I will need money. More money than I have in my purse. I will find it. I must. The call has come. I must obey it.
Francis quickly turned all his possessions into money. Money he must use in the service of the Lord. But not everyone understood his generosity. His father, the elder Bernardoni, shrewd businessman that he was, had scant patience with his son. And so, a few days later, in the home of Guido, Bishop of Assisi...
Good people of Assisi, no doubt you all know the purpose for which we are assembled here. Pietro Bernardoni, here on my right, has instituted legal proceedings against his son, Francis. Signor Bernardoni, will you tell us in your own words why you have taken so serious a step? A step that must be painful to you as well as to your son?
Painful, my Lord Bishop. It's no more painful than it would be to prosecute any thief and swindler. This thief who bears my name came rushing home the other day, loaded his horse with several bolts of cloth from my store, drove to the public market and sold them. Sold them at any price he could get for them into the bargain. Not only that, but sold the horse as well.
But I understood you to say the horse was his.
His to use. But in reality, no more his to sell than was the cloth. Surely you agree, my Lord Bishop.
Well, perhaps. Let us pass on to the question of the use that was made of the money.
Use? Misuse, you mean? The money he took to the priest in charge of the little church of San Damiano. The priest had far more sense than he had. Told him the money was not his to give away and refused to accept it. Whereupon, as if it were so much worthless paper, Francis tossed it down and forgot all about it.
Did the boy then return home?
Not he. For some time, he remained with the priest of San Damiano. When he did finally return home, how did he come? In beggar's rags, with a crowd of scoffing townspeople at his heels. It was the most humiliating moment I've ever known.
And what action did you take then?
The action any father would take. I gave him the beating he deserved and shut him up in his room.
And did Francis return the money?
He did not. He gave me some cock and bull story about it being no longer his to return, since he had offered it to the church. I told him I would have him into court. To that the young scamp had the audacity to reply that he had vowed his life to the service of God, and therefore must be tried not in the civil courts, but in our bishop's court. I appeal to you, my lord. If this sort of thing is allowed to continue, I will be reduced to penury.
Well, now, do I understand you want to disinherit your son, Signor Bernardoni?
That's exactly what I want. Certainly no man can blame me.
Just a moment. Francis Bernardoni?
Yes, my lord bishop.
You have heard the charges your father brings against you. Have you anything to say in your own defense?
I have nothing to say, my lord.
If, as you say, you want to be God's servant, I advise you to return the money which your father demands. It is not rightfully yours, so I am certain God would not want it used in his service. Return the money, Francis. Then perhaps we may heal this sad quarrel between your father and yourself.
My lord, I give back the money gladly. Not only the money, but all I wear was given me by my father and is rightfully his. He shall have the clothes as well.
Young Bernardoni has spirit. See, he's removing all his clothes and dropping them there at his father's feet along with the purse.
Listen, everybody. You shall now call Pietro Bernardoni my father. Henceforth, I desire to say only our Father who art in heaven.
In a rough cloak supplied by the bishop, Francis left the bishop's court. He was homeless and penniless. And as yet his vocation had not been revealed to him. One chapter of his life had ended, the chapter of his carefree youth. Soon his mission would begin. 3 years go by, years spent in the rebuilding of San Damiano by the labor of his own hands, in visiting his friends the lepers, in discovering and repairing another almost ruined church, the tiny church of St. Mary of the Angels, better known as the Porciuncola. Then one morning at Mass, as he listens to the gospel for the day...
And as you go, preach the message, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Cure the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out devils. Freely you have received, freely give. Do not keep gold or silver or money in your girdles, no wallet for your journey, nor two tunics, nor sandals, nor staff. For the laborer deserves his living.
Those were his words to his disciples. And why not to me? Freely I have received the joy of his friendship. Why shouldn't I as freely give it to others? I have neither gold, nor silver, nor wallet, nor staff. Why shouldn't I go forth as they went, simply telling the story of his life and death and glorious resurrection? There are my friends, the workmen, gathered there in the field for lunch. Perhaps they will listen.
Francis!
Yes?
Francis! Come and rest with us a while, Francis. Have you finished your work on the church?
Almost.
You look happy. What have you found? Buried treasure?
Yes, my brothers. I have found treasure buried where all who seek can find. Listen to our sisters, the birds. How merrily they sing. See how gaily our brother, the sun, showers his golden rays in all the world. They and we are all God's creatures. Why shouldn't we rejoice in his goodness together?
What? A sermon? Keep still and listen.
My brothers, you will say that there is sickness and death in the world, and poverty and great suffering. I say to you, look upon these things too as instruments of God's love. Sickness and suffering are things of a moment, a day, a year. They will pass and be forgotten forever in the eternal joy of heaven. What is death but the opening of a gate through which, if we will, we may pass to the presence of the blessed? And poverty. My lady, poverty. She is blessed, for she walked the paths of Judea with our Lord himself. She is very beautiful, my lady, poverty, and very wise. Well, she knows that the burden of many possessions hinders our progress to the realities of God's kingdom. Accept the lady, poverty, as your friend. Let her teach you of her wisdom. Accept her.
Perhaps Francis does not realize it, but his great mission has begun. His simple words, his earnestness, the brightness of his handsome young face wins for him increasing numbers of hearers. Barefooted, with a piece of rope girding his single rough garment at the waist, he walks from town to town preaching his simple gospel of love for Christ and one's fellow men, and joyful confidence in God's goodness. Two other young men come to join him now. Peter Cattaneo, a lay canon of the cathedral, and Bernard of Quinta Valley. When they ask him what they may do to serve the Lord.
It's too big a question for me to decide. God must decide for me. We will all three go to the church, and after we've asked his guidance, we will open the Bible, see what passage our eyes are led to.
If thou wilt be perfect, go sell what thou hast and give to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven.
Any man will come after me. Let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me.
And he commanded them that they should take nothing for the journey.
Brothers, three times have we opened the Bible, and the three passages make a complete whole. God has heard and...
Three. But he's so wasted, so frail.
Oh, you young brothers know little of our Father. It is penance and much fasting that have wasted his body. It is tears of sorrow for the sins of the world that have almost washed the sight from his eyes. His body is too frail to house the great spirit that lives within it. Soon I think that spirit will be freed of the flesh. But mind, when I speak of penance and tears, that our Father has always performed his penances joyfully and for love, and his tears have been only half sadness, and the rest joy. He is the happiest of men, our father.
And what does he do all day there in the hut, Brother Leo?
He prays, and for hours at a time, while his body remains kneeling in the hut, his spirit is wrapped in close communion with God. Only the other night I went to see if all was well with him, and found him kneeling among the trees as our Lord knelt in the garden.
Could you hear his words?
Only a few. I stole up through the trees, and as I came near, he raised his face to heaven. There was such brightness in his face as I have never seen. I strained my ears for his words and heard him say, "Who art thou, O my most sweet God? And what am I, most vile worm and worthless servant?" It was as if the small spark of knowledge that lives in most of us had become in him a great flame, and in its brightness he contemplated and understood the infinite. Then he saw me and gently reproached me for spying on him, and I returned here.
Brothers, our father comes forth from the hut.
Where is he? I don't see him.
There, standing with his face to the rising sun. He doesn't see us. He's watching that great bird that is flying towards us from the east.
What bird can it be? It's larger than the largest eagle.
It is a seraph, such as the prophets described of old. A seraph with arms extended, as it were, upon a cross.
It approaches our father.
It embraces him.
He's wrapped in its brightness as in a great fire.
The seraph has faded now, and our father has fallen to the ground. Come quickly, we must go to him.
Father Francis! Father Francis! Are you alive?
Yes. Yes, Brother Leo. Give me your hand. I have no strength to rise.
Father, your hands, your feet, the marks of crucifixion.
Speak to no one of these marks, brothers. The world would not understand.
Neither do I understand, Father Francis. What is this we have seen?
I have no words to tell you, brother. You have seen. You have seen that, for which there are no words.
So, in the last chapter of Francis' life, came the great mystery of the stigmata, wounds similar to our Lord's in his hands, feet, and side. There were less than 2 years left of this chapter, years of great bodily pain, of increasing blindness, little moments of darkness before the bright light of heaven should envelop him forever. Now it is October the 3rd of the year 1226, the 45th year of Francis Bernardoni's life. The brothers surround his bed. One by one, he has given them his blessing.
Our sisters, the larks are singing praises to the Lord. Let us join our voices with theirs.
How can we sing when our hearts are heavy? How can we rejoice when we know you'll soon be taken from us?
My son, I at least shall rejoice. I shall welcome Sister Death when she comes. Until she comes, let us recite a psalm. Brother Leo, will you begin?
I shall try. I cried unto the Lord with my voice. I made supplication to the Lord.
I cried to thee, O Lord. I said, thou art my hope, my portion in the land of the living.
Bring my soul out of prison, that I may praise thy name. The just wait for me until thou reward me.